Today's program is brought to you by our neighbors, Fine and Raw Chocolate, producers of the most delicious bean-to-bar chocolates in Brooklyn. For more information, visit fineandraw.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today, and thank you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther, how are you, man?
Damon, it has been forever since we've been in the studio together.
I know, yeah. I was here about a month ago, but you were gone.
I was, and then you have been literally traveling the world.
Oh, yeah. I actually went to a lot of new places over the past, like, 3 weeks. Went to South Africa. I was in Johannesburg, and I was in Cape Town. Okay, so here's the thing.
Lay it on me.
In Cape Town, there's one of the seven motherfucking, like, wonders of the world.
Sure.
Table Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You take a tram, like a cable car thing, up to the top of the mountain. And I have, like, severe vertigo.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. You've told me that before.
Yeah. But I was like, every morning when I
I'm not going to not go up there.
Can't not go there.
Right.
Yeah. So
must do. Here we are. Must do.
So I was hanging out there with our Swedish brand ambassador, marketing director for Brooklyn Gin, Anders. He was like, we got to do this, man. We got to do this. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. We're hanging out there, waiting in line for like 2 hours. It was very busy. Waiting in line for 2 hours. I had like lots of opportunities to back out of it. And it's like the morning, it kind of like starts raining a little bit. They say in Cape Town that you have all four seasons in one day.
Sure.
So it starts raining, and then we get on the cable car, and we go up into the fucking rain cloud, dude. Do you want to...
That's high up there, man.
Do you know what I'm saying, man?
Rain clouds are not low.
Do you even understand what I'm saying, dude?
Yeah, you're up there.
We're in the rain cloud.
Did you get above it?
I was looking down at rain coming from... Dude, trippy. But it was awesome. I love Cape Town. Love Johannesburg. South Africa, like, everyone's incredible there. And I went to Bangkok for, like, a week. Got to ride on the back of a scooter.
I saw your Instagram videos. I saw your Instagram videos, and it was both exciting and terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that looks like a thrill, but also deadly.
Yeah.
But totally, but the dude driving looked like so casual. He was just like, yeah, this is normal.
He was like, eh.
I'm zipping. Yeah, he's like, I'm zipping through traffic on a tiny scooter.
Totally.
And, you know, there's a big dude on the back Instagramming it.
Amazing bar scenes in both of those locations. Like, I mean, obviously, like, Johannesburg and Cape Town. Cape Town's a little bit more like metro, and then Johannesburg is like just like a real like city, you know.
Right.
And then Bangkok is like, wow, I couldn't believe how many like how big gin is in like those places. It's like huge, man. And like we were
gin is delicious.
Well, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. But it was kind of crazy because one of our buddies was like literally like I think like 30 minutes, like we had like probably I think our cars probably passed each other to and from the airport, and that's right. Like he was in Bangkok, and that's the guy we have on the show today.
That's today's guest.
Yeah, Jesse Vito, man, this is your first time on the show, right?
Jesse Vito, welcome, dude.
First time on the show. Thank you,
gentlemen. Nice, man. Welcome.
I'm going to embarrass you a little by giving you this big old intro I wrote up for you.
All right, let's do it.
Previously a part of the award-winning teams at Booker & Dax and the Dead Rabbit, our guest has recently led Blacktail to number 31 on the world's 50 best bars. Pretty impressive. While also being awarded Best New American Cocktail Bar at the Spirited Awards at Tales of the Cocktail in 2017. You were named New York City's Rising Star Bartender by Star Chefs and earned a place in Zagat's 30 Under 30 Industry Game Changers in New York City. And now you're heading the number 8 bar in the world on the 50 Best List, Atlas, in Singapore.
And he's only 22.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pile of accomplishments, man.
Yeah, it was a little embarrassing to have those read out loud.
Yeah, but dude, like,
when someone piles them all up at once, you start to like see what you've done yourself.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm squirming a little.
But I mean, it isn't like you didn't work to get there. You know, it's not like it just fell into your lap. Like, what? Where did you? You're from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I met you here in New York City. Obviously, we actually worked together and list on those list of accolades. But you and I used to work together for Amaro Montenegro. Where do you feel like you got your start? What lit the fire in you?
Well, definitely it started in San Francisco is where I started to kind of fall into learning about cocktails. I got my cousin Gabriel, who's actually just heading to the airport now. He was hanging out for BCB. He was the one that got me into bars. He started bar backing at a bar called Bourbon & Branch in San Francisco. If you guys have been there, you may have been to this bar. And this is when the cocktail thing was really taking off, like 2007.
Kind of heard of that place.
Yeah. Sorry, we were just talking on the way over here about like our first
you and Big
cocktail.
John, who's also in the studio. He said he's not going to speak on the mic, but I'll goad him until he does. John, say hello.
Hey guys.
Hey, welcome.
So yeah, well, John and I both had in separate times a revolver at Johnny Center cocktail, a revolver at Bourbon & Branch, and that's both of our memories is like a first proper cocktail sometime around 2007. But yeah, I got into bars, didn't know what the hell I was doing. I liked to drink, but I didn't really know anything about a proper drink or, you know, the history of things and all that. But I really fell in love with it. I fell in love with the pace, the whole like camaraderie and team environment. And I was in school at the time, and I was kind of like not feeling school. I was feeling the bar life. And
what were you studying?
Well, I was still doing general ed, but I was U.S. history was my major with a minor in psych. I actually wanted to be a high school history teacher.
Oh, that man, was my I love original psychedelic music.
Yeah, yeah.
Psych.
Why are you guys laughing?
Yeah. That's where it came together, though. You know, like there's so much history and there's so much story to alcohol and everything. So that really all came together for me.
Yeah,
but
sure. Yeah, I always feel like it's like the coolest thing about being in the spirits industry is like it hits on every subject.
Mm.
History, science, politics, religion. You know, it's like everything, man.
Architecture.
It's
everything. You name it. We got totally. Parts of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I got into it. I started bar backing at a place called Beretta out there and kind of cut my teeth, learned to bartend. And
with Ryan Fitzgerald?
Yeah, Fitzgerald. Yeah, he was busting my chops
from
big
ABV.
Time back then. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, now he has his bar, ABV, which is great.
Yep.
And then around 2011, that's kind of where I was like, all right, like I feel like I should take this more seriously. I feel like I should go all in. And I moved to New York, and I probably met you pretty soon after, actually, both of you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know that New York's certainly a target-rich area, but it's not like you left Des Moines, Iowa. You left San Francisco, also target-rich. Why did you say to yourself, I got to go to New York?
San Francisco is great and has a great scene, but it you know, also growing up there, San Francisco is a small city, and I just found myself, I couldn't walk down the street without bumping into someone I went to high school with, without, you know, some people I knew in the industry, which can still happen, but it was just a little too comfortable. It was a little too safe. Like, I knew I needed to push myself out of that comfort zone, and you know, New York is notoriously the place to go to get your ass kicked and learn.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally, man. I did the same thing from Oklahoma City. I was just like, dude, I at some point you're like, all right, I've done this, kind of like conquered it, still love it, but you have to expand your own like CV, you know what I mean?
Yeah, indeed. Did you have any like soft place to land, or did you just come here? I came here. I think I've mentioned my story many times. I came here sight unseen. I had never been to New York. I rented an apartment over the phone, and I got here without a job. Like, how about you? How'd you get here?
Yeah, I had been before, but I mean, not too dissimilar. You know, I was like sleeping on a friend's couch. I had no money. You know, I came here. I didn't have a job lined up. I literally got a job because like a friend of a friend left his wallet at a restaurant and like met the general manager there and hooked me up, you know, like as that goes. And that ended up being a sambar, Motherfucker sambar, which led to me working at Booker & Dax.
Well, the great thing about New York City is that if you're going to like get here. Yeah, all you gotta do is get here because, like,
showing up, man. That's 80%.
There are dollar slices everywhere.
Yeah,
you can survive on dollar pizza slices
for sure
for a while, and we often
have to
do
yeah.
because, like, when you first move here, it's like, all right. We're gonna do it.
It's brutal.
It's also
months,
a good way of getting your ass kicked.
My first 6 months were not comfortable, and frankly, at the close of my first 6 months in New York City, I was defeated. I was thinking I'm out of here, but then I caught footing somewhere, and it just started to click, and I stuck with it.
You got Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, I fell in love with my captor.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's what happens with New York City. You're like part of you is like, no, I swear to God, I love it. I really do.
So wait, Sambar, which is part of Momofuku, was your first bar gig proper?
First proper bar gig in New York. Real quick, I want to go back to the dollar pizza because I had this experience when I moved here to New York, right?
That's a whole episode.
And
man.
I went, it was like a $5 pie, and I was broke as hell. And I was staying on a friend's couch who lived like in kind of midtown, like 37th and 3rd Avenue. And I go to this pizza place, and it's like $5 pie, you know. And I'm like, all right, perfect. We're feeding the whole apartment tonight with this $5. And I go in, and I get it, and like it comes out, and it's literally just the bread. And I was like, what's this? And he's like, it's $5 for the pizza. I was like, there's no cheese on here. He was like, yeah, well, the cheese, that's $7.
Oh man!
Wow,
fucking like bait and switch, right?
Yeah, man.
That's just New York, right there. You just get hustled.
That's fucked up, man.
I had to argue with them a while to get that cheese on there.
Dude, that's so legit, like New York, man. Like the hustle is very fucking real, you know. Yeah. Like New York does not make anything easy for you, but it makes you like a more professional
it
person.
It makes you stronger,
like,
more agile. You know? Like it builds.
You gotta have thick skin.
It builds into you a lot of things.
No doubt.
Okay, so back to Sambar. You're at Sambar. This is your first New York City bar. And Sambar, I mean, not necessarily known for a bar program. You know, they're known for great food and you know, the whole David Chang thing. But kind of, I guess, serendipitously, Dave Arnold decides to open up Booker and Dax in the back room of Sambar.
Don Lee was the bar dude for...
He was, Sambar. But I don't think that... I mean, you
and
can correct me.
He did everything
me,
neat
but I don't think
and rock glass.
Sambar didn't get a whole lot of press for cocktails. They had a solid, like, quiet program, right?
Yeah.
So you weren't like just slinging beers and shots. You were making drinks.
Yeah, no, I'm making a lot of cocktails, but it was service bartending. Because
there's almost no real actual bar to sit at, right?
No, there isn't.
Like 4 seats, maybe.
And there's like 4 seats at the bar, but the server will still serve those 4 seats. So it could be a little awkward sometimes because you're like just making drinks in front of people, and they don't get that your job is just to make the drinks and push them out.
Actually,
you know?
that was something that really freaked me out about like being in Bangkok. It's like the bartenders don't like actually. A lot of the places, they don't talk to you. Like, the servers will walk around to you at the... Like, when you're sitting at a bar stool, they'll come up to you, and they'll get your drink order. And I'm like, that's cool and everything, but, like, I really want to talk to the bartender. Like,
right.
I'm sitting at the bar for a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
it's
I can just be sitting at a...
Culturally different approach, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of crazy. But, go ahead. You were saying, like, that same thing with
Sambar. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just service bartending. And it was actually like my resume ended up in the hands of Tristan
Willie.
Yeah, over at Booker and Dax. And I think, you know how it is. There's like, you can never have enough people to possibly jump in as like someone has to leave or things happen. And just someone happened to be leaving. And he was just like, hey, I see you've worked at some cocktail bars in San Francisco. Do you want to work at Booker and Dax? I was like, yes, I would love to. And that was kind of that.
Amazing. And that program was, you know, very forward-thinking at the time. It still is. You know, they've moved and changed their name to Existing Conditions. But, like, super forward-thinking and, like, a lot of technical drive behind that program. And you were there for quite some time, right? From the beginning till...
Was there, like, about 2 years?
Yeah, that's...
About 2 years.
That's a long time in a bar that only lasted about 4.
Yeah.
So you were there for 50% of its life.
Yeah.
True. And, I mean, this business, people move around so much, too. So to be at a bar for more than a couple of years is not that common for bartenders, you know?
Truth. But during that time, you still did other things. As mentioned, you worked with me for Montenegro on the B team with Jason Luttrell and a whole bunch of other nerds.
Yeah, I want that job back. That was a great job.
That was a real, that was a nice, it wasn't a difficult paycheck.
Yeah.
I'll say that. It was a paycheck that was pretty easy to pick up.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing an event for them tonight. You know, BCB's in town and Montenegro's hosting the official closing party, so I'll be bartending at the House of Yes.
Very nice.
Which is just shit show.
Yeah.
That is
definitely will be.
It's going to be great, though.
So, Jesse,
glitter everywhere.
Let's get into let's talk about your personal style of bartending. Like as far as like the focus goes on, like I feel like everyone has kind of like their own like thumbprint on, you know, like their style of drinks. I know, like working at Dead Rabbit, like you had like the 13 bitters bottles pickup or tincture pickup probably for every fucking cocktail. Yeah.
but finished like, with nutmeg.
Yeah, always finish with nutmeg. When in doubt, finish with fucking nutmeg. Yeah. So what would you say is like your, like, what was the cocktail that turned you into a bartender, basically? Like
Sazerac.
Yeah?
Yeah. I actually have a very vivid memory burned in my mind that will never leave my head of the first time I had a Sazerac. It was at a bar in San Francisco. I had just started bar backing at this other place. One of the bartenders, as many do in the States, was also working at another place. And he made me a Sazerac. And I remember, like, he slid it over to the bar. I was a very inexperienced, you know, cocktail drinker at the time. I was about 21 years old.
Did you shoot it?
No, I didn't shoot it. I didn't shoot it. Now that would have been a little bit better. But no, I just, like, I sipped it, and it was that aha moment, you know? Like, everything clicked. Time froze for a second. Like, I remember the two people that were at this table over there where the light was coming into the bar. You know, that moment is always imprinted in my mind. But yeah, Sazerac, that was the drink that did it.
Was it a brandy-based or rye-based?
Rye-based.
Yeah, but well-chilled, right, balanced.
Yeah, it was a beauty.
Glass
a beauty.
Frozen, I'm sure.
Yes.
Aroma of anise.
All that.
Like, yeah, that's a great drink to, like, catch your eye and turn you into, you know, a believer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always loved, like, the reason why I asked you if you shot it.
Oh, well, I've seen many new Sazerac like, drinkers shoot Sazerac. Yeah, they think it's a shot.
Yeah, because it's like served neat in a rocks glass.
Mm-hmm.
And like typically, it's not garnished. It's like zested with lemon and then discarded. So you're like, what do I fucking do? It's like that, like Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. He's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Yeah. Like, what do I fucking do with this, man? And you're just like, I've seen people just like crush them.
Oh yeah, so have I. It's a common.
And like I even asked, like, and there was like, I think it was like maybe 3 years ago, someone was at my bar at Grand Army and they ordered a Sazerac. We were doing like an event where it was like, I think it was like a Michter's whiskey event. We were doing a Sazerac.
Shout out to Big John, who's in the room.
Yeah, and they get the drink and they're like, they just had that like kind of look on their face, like. You know, just like full eye contact the entire time.
And that's a big they were just like, shot.
Boom. Like the whole thing. Put the glass down. And I was like, you know, that's not a shot, right? And they're like, no, it's not a shot. It's a fucking Sazerac.
Yeah.
Make me another one.
Ooh.
I was like, damn.
Fucking monsters.
Cool. Slide over that 50.
Yeah. I was like, all right, you're about to be fucking just lit.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
shooting Sazerac.
We should take a break because it's the middle of the show, and we'll come back and keep talking to Desi Vita. But then I want to point out that you worked at Dead Rabbit, which, of course, a heavy list of Irish whiskeys. Then you worked at Blacktail, massive list of rums. And now you're working at Atlas, a huge list of gins. Like, seems like you've got a trail.
Yeah,
let's
talk about that bar.
Seems like you've got a trail you follow.
Yeah.
We'll talk about all that when we come right back. Thanks for listening.
Today's program is brought to you by our neighbors, Fine and Raw Chocolate. They make bean-to-bar chocolate and confections in HRN's backyard here in Brooklyn. Fine and Raw is committed to sustainably sourcing their cocoa beans directly from organic cocoa farmers. They use minimal processing and stone grinding to accentuate chocolate flavor and aroma. Their chocolate is sweetened exclusively with unrefined coconut sugar, which blends delicious caramel notes into the chocolate. Crafted for chocolate lovers, all of Fine and Raw's bars, truffles, and spreads are 100% plant-based. From creamy bars blended with nut butter to salt-sprinkled dark chocolate, sweet truffle bars to toasty coconut dulce de leche, Fine and Raw is obsessed with creating next-level flavors. Their chocolate hazelnut butter made with the best Oregon hazelnuts is the best thing you could ever eat with a spoon. It begs to be drizzled on ice cream, waffles, strawberries, you get the idea. Above all, Fine and Raw is a community of people dedicated to the idea that chocolate is magic. Visit fineandraw.com for your chocolate fix.
are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Souther.
Hey, buddy.
What are you doing?
I'm making gin tonics making over drinks? Here with Jesse Vita.
Nice.
Jesse prefers a gin soda, which is, interesting news.
Gin soda?
Gin soda for him. Gin tonic for the rest of us.
Gin soda, baby.
All right, dude.
I mean, I guess that lets the gin speak a little bit more.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like a really wet gin tonic. I was in San Sebastian, Spain, and changed my DNA to drink a gin tonic over there, which is typically same pour, 2 ounces or so of gin, but then about 7 ounces total of tonic in a giant goblet glass over lots of ice.
I've always...
Very refreshing.
Like as far as like the Spanish-style gin tonics, I've always heard that it was like 1 to 7.
Yeah.
Like gin to tonic.
Yeah, it could be.
I love that. In like in a giant goblet, you know, like a wine glass.
It's insane.
It's great.
Because they drink them all day. So it's
that's the thing. Is like you have to make them.
It's sessionable.
Long drink.
Yeah,
you know?
Super long.
Yeah.
Where here in America, I feel like it's 2 ounces of gin and basically 2 ounces of tonic, and then kind of neither does a favor for the other.
It's when you're on a flight. It's always Bombay Sapphire.
Yep.
And the tiny bottle of Bombay Sapphire, and have you noticed this lately? They don't give you the goddamn can of soda anymore. They're just you have to ask for it. Jesus. But it used to be I would order 2 gins and a can of tonic.
Yeah, give me that can.
But then it's just
I like it in the can.
Dude.
Anyway, we're drinking gin, which is poignant because this guy works at a gin bar. And also, Negroni Week's coming up. Are you going to be selling a lot of Negronis? Do you do a Negroni over there? Do you do Negroni Week over there?
Yeah, we do. We do. It's pretty big. We signed up. We'll be doing it.
It's 100-year anniversary of the Negroni.
Correct.
Just had a bunch of Garibaldis at Dante before we came over.
We're doing our
part, drinking the Campari for sure.
Outstanding.
Yeah, man.
Roll up your sleeves and drink some Campari and some gin.
Yeah, there's some of that activation, the precursor to that is happening a lot right now. It's Bar Convent Brooklyn.
Right now.
So there's a lot of activation going on with
Negroni being Campari. 100. Yeah, they've got a beautiful stand over there where everything's painted red and it just says Negroni 100 and... looks pretty rad. Invite Magazine's here to sponsor that as well, and they're the kind of catalyst and sponsor of the whole thing. In the first place, it raises tons of money for charities all over the world of all different kinds because each bar chooses their charity. I chose Muttville this year to help rescue older dogs. My partner is very into animal activism, so we're going with a charity for dogs this year. Negroni's turning 100. You've got Campari, of course, at Atlas. Do you have 100 gins? Could you make 100 different Negronis?
I could make 1,300 different Negronis.
Holy shit.
We're going to need more Campari.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
How does one stand in front of a bar that has 1,300 of a single category? That's incredible.
Don't you do that at Amore Amargo?
I have 280 Amaro. That's
but no one's counting.
Dropping the bucket. It's a dropping bucket. Well, I'm going to open another Amore Amargo in 2 months, so we'll try and up that number.
What the fuck? What?
Well, you've been gone a while, so I was bored. I decided to open another bar. Honeybees is already 6 weeks old. I'm bored.
I've been bored as fuck in San Francisco, man. But I haven't... Well, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, we're going to do a Amore Amargo 2 in Brooklyn
next month. This motherfucker
writes
his book on an iPhone.
Yeah, man, I'm a busy man. I'm on the move.
2 thumbs.
I got my scooter.
Dude. Do you write your book on the scooter?
Why not? I'm working on the next book.
Amazing.
What's it like to stand in front of a bar? How does your guest take that? I mean, obviously, it's probably both fascinating and intimidating.
Yeah, it is both those
to them
things.
And to you and your staff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a big thing too, right? Is to maintain, to educate. It's pointless to have it if we don't know how to talk about it. We don't know how to sell it. So we're always looking for ways to improve.
I mean, I face that same problem with a fraction of the number. I have about 280 MR. You said 1,300, and I face that same problem.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot. But I mean, it's definitely part of the attraction of Atlas. And Atlas is very grand. We were talking before. You've seen pictures before. I mean, it's just such a massive space. It's so lush and bright and it's art deco and detailed, and as soon as you walk into Atlas your head rolls back and you look up and look around. I still do it when I walk in, and I see people doing it all the time when they come in. That's part of our thing. We really want to, I believe we have the largest collection of gins in the world right now. I don't know, that may not be true, but I haven't heard of anyone having more. But it's it takes a huge team to maintain it, from selecting the gins that we put on the back bar or in our tower, to, you know, educating the staff, to sourcing it. Singapore is also an open market, so I can buy a bottle of gin off you and throw it in our list and put it in the back bar. So we have that advantage and ability to have those spirits.
You have to fuck around with the three-tier system you do in the United States.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Which is probably a blessing and a curse in some ways.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, think about that number, Damon. If it's 1,300, even if you focused on three a day, it'd take you a year and a half to drink all the gins.
Yeah.
To, like, focus on them. So as a staff, like, how are you updating and maintaining that education? I mean, obviously it's got to be a lot of written and readable material, because they can't be drinking gins every day. You'd A, be whittling away at your inventory, and B, they'd be hammered all the time.
Well, we do. we do.
Like, fucking bunch of shithouse employees walking around trying to talk about gin.
Sounds like Grand Army.
Yeah. The drinking culture is different there,
though. You guys got working fireplace over there at Atlas?
Like, you know what? When I was running bars in New York, it was more like, all right, we're taking too many shots sometimes there. It's like they're so behaved, like the staff in the Asian culture. Sometimes I'll be like, all right, guys, I'm pouring us some shots. And everyone's like, no, I'm okay. I'm like, no. We're doing these shots. Like come on.
Seriously. Yeah.
Right, this is education.
This is your job right
now. This is, camaraderie. Exactly. This is a lot of things, you know.
To answer your question, though, basically what we do is every day at lineup, we always taste a gin and talk about it. And different staff members are tasked to, like, bring the information. Because, you know, it's one thing to just hand someone a giant Bible and be like, read these, and nothing's going to really manifest, you know? But having the staff lead the education, I think it really helps them internalize a lot of it.
Oh, yeah, of course, cool. Of course. So each day someone's responsible to talk about a particular gin on the back
bar.
Yeah,
correct.
When you do, like, your gin tonic service, do you do, like what's your presentation style like with, like, your martinis and your gin tonics?
Yeah, I mean, for a classic gin and tonic, we have a selection of about 14 different tonics, obviously all kinds of different gins.
Yeah.
And that'll get served like we're used to. Yeah. Like in a highball, you know, whatever, some citrus or whatever garnish requested or thought to be had with that gin. But we do also give a shout out to, you know, that Spanish style that we were discussing. So we also offer a gin tonica, which is like served in that Spanish style with the big balloon glass, you know, more ice, more tonic in there. So those are the two main serves. But then we offer like a slow gin and tonic. We have these things in our menu, and it's cool because it engages people, I think, in like certain things that they wouldn't really know about or try, like an old Tom and tonic, things like that. But I mean, you know, we have a big cocktail menu. We have not only 1,300 gins, we have about 250 other spirits on the back bar, from, you know, agave to rum to everything.
Well, because Atlas is in a hotel, right? So you got to cater to.
It's not in a hotel.
Oh, it's not.
It's meant to look like that.
Oh.
So it's built out. It's like an homage to like these 1930s like Art Deco French grand lobby. Yeah, totally.
Full deal,
it's actually
man.
Commercial real estate above us. So a lot of embassies, different agencies, and stuff like that.
Dude, so I was just thinking about this.
But you do get, you know, like people walking in there who are like, I don't really. I'm going
They're
to a
like,
bar.
Can
I don't
I
know if
here?
It's all gin, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So you,
yeah,
you still want to cater to them in some way.
Of course, of course.
But without sloping too far from your ethos.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're definitely a gin bar, but we have other things.
I was just thinking about the staff training and like the way you present the, and also like the way that you said like that the staff, you know, obviously in the United States, like we have like a huge sometimes problem with like the staff drinking a ton like on the job. But I like the idea of that, like that everyone's treating more like professionally, and tasting is more on the professional side, like actual research for, you know, doing your job. Mm-hmm. There was I was talking with a really good buddy of mine, ours. I think we're all buddies with Willie Shine,
of course,
you know, from Jägermeister. He's
been in here with us,
yeah. So he and I were talking one day. Actually, the last time he was on the radio show, we went to Rock-a-Rolla and had some Budweisers and some shots of tequila, because that's what bartenders do.
Yeah,
you know. So
just another day at the office
at 4:30 in the afternoon. But he was I was actually like kind of picking his brain. I was like, dude, so how do you think I'd be better at my job as like a brand ambassador for a gin company? And he was like, dude, don't be a master of gin. Be a master of botanicals. He's like, I know you love like Amaro and like Fernet and like gin. Like, so like the thing is like, there's a common theme with all these, like you love vermouth, you know, like become a master of botanicals. Like, study that. And I was like, it kind of like blew my mind. So like
Willie Shine.
Yeah, Willie Shine, man. I mean, he was saying it like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he...
Let's go surfing, man.
Yeah. But he, like, just thinking about, like, the... we've done that in, like, lineups, like, at the, you know, like, pre-shift meetings and stuff like that. It's like, we, rather than talking about, like, the, just, like, the spirit or the brand, it's like, let's talk about what's in it, you know? Like, you know, like, everyone can talk about, like, spaghetti meatballs, but, like, let's talk about what's in the spaghetti.
Yeah.
What's in the meatballs. You know, right. What's in the sauce? You know, like, that's yeah. like, it's kind of like, I like this. I like this, like, setup to where people aren't just trying to take shots all night yeah. long at your part.
How many staff you got over there, and how many seats is, because I mean, all, obviously, Damon and I have only seen photos.
Mm. And we also have tiny bars.
And it's, yeah, exactly, for sure, comparatively. So, yeah, like, how what are we talking about when we think about Atlas?
150 seats.
That's actually less than I assumed from the photos. It looks humongous.
Yeah, I mean, it's big, yeah. but it's 150 seats, but it's also controlled. Like, there's not a lot of standing. There's some standing, but not a lot of it. I would say definitely, I mean, and one of the biggest challenges for me there is we open at 10 a.m. and we serve the full cocktail menu.
That's awesome.
And we go till 2. And it is awesome. And, you know, I actually had a...
That was like Prime Meats back in the day. We opened up at 7 a.m. and you could order a fucking Cote de Boeuf and a Manhattan.
Yeah.
7 a.m.
Let's kick the day off.
And you know what? People
did
that just out of spite. Yeah. They're like, I did it actually a couple times.
I mean, people did that because they were still ending their night. Their night wasn't
totally,
over.
Totally. Yeah. It was all just like the Kiwanis Yacht starting. Club bartenders. Yeah,
exactly.
100%. But it was pretty dope, man.
So wait, 10 a.m.? That's another thing that probably made me think it was a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way, and it feels that way to a certain respect. But it's kind of a blessing, though, because I don't have to go through like the hotel chain of sure. everything to like order liquor and all that kind of stuff. But... Yeah, I mean, it's a big space, and I think it's definitely, I think it's a nice staple opening at 10 a.m. and having that available, but it's also a challenge because I have to have a fully, properly trained bartender on at 10 a.m. You know, we have 3 wells. Bar team is probably about 14 people. The floor, I think we have like 54 employees, roughly.
That seems shockingly low for such a massive
really?
Place. And all those hours. Like as soon as he said 10 a.m., I was like, oh man, that's a whole nother team.
Yeah, you start like looking at the overlapping hours, it's like it's pretty insane, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Putting the schedule together. I feel like it's like a Rubik's Cube every time. Like when I finish like putting the roster and schedule together, I'm like, got it.
Yeah. Do you have team members who are like, no man, I just wanna be the 10 a.m. Like that's my gig. I wanna work from 10 to whatever and go home and have a life. Because I would do that if it was good pay.
Yeah, and well,
like,
I mean,
I was a day bartender for a long time, actually, 3 years.
It's all salary there, so it doesn't make a difference. Oh. So, like, if someone wanted to have their lifestyle be that way, they could.
I don't understand these words you're saying.
Celery, it comes in the
celery.
It comes in your Bloody Mary. Red snapper Atlas.
It's a garnish.
Yeah,
this is weird that you're talking about garnishes coming from Sambar, where you didn't garnish anything.
But yeah, so I don't have anyone particularly who like only wants to work those AM shifts. So I kind of rotate everybody, but
do you rotate as well? I mean, do you work that 10 AM shift sometimes?
I used to do it, but I don't anymore just because it's
you're
like
the fucking boss. You're the fucking boss. That's why.
Yeah. Got those meetings, got those emails. You sure. know how it is.
I do. But so you've been there since you said around November-ish?
Yeah. I moved there in November.
And you moved for the gig. You got the gig before you got over there.
Correct.
Because there was nobody over there that could do the job.
Unlike when we moved to New York. Yeah, we already had a job.
Right. but you know what I'm saying? Like, were you headhunted? Was it because you were doing such a kick-ass job at both Blacktail and Dead Rabbit previously? Or,
yeah.
Did someone come to you? You certainly didn't just be like, I'm going to go work over there.
I got to
put in an application.
Yeah, exactly.
We got an online thing, right?
Yeah, I actually found it on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a text message that led to a phone call from a friend of mine, Jason Williams, who lives out in Singapore, and he's actually the general manager of the creative team for Proof & Company there, and they do some consulting.
Our good friend Chris Lauder works.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's good to be on that side of the world.
Dominating
with
Chris. That
shit. Yeah, he's a killer, man. And he was just like, hey, if you're interested, let's have the conversation. And it was just a conversation to start because I didn't know that it was what I wanted. I mean, obviously, to pick up and move. Literally to the other side of the world is a big move, and but that conversation led to another conversation that led to an interview with the general manager that led to, you know, FaceTimes with the owners and an interview with the food and beverage manager. And it was just like, as we continued to have that momentum in our interviews, it became very clear to me that we were all kind of like in the same vision and had just kind of saw what we wanted to do with Atlas and what we think we can do with it. And yeah, I mean, long story short, we came to terms.
Yeah. It's really like you mentioned Chris Lauder before, but like I feel like there's like a very interesting kind of like dynamic switch with it's been happening for like the last like I'd say 4 or 5 years, like with this kind of like headhunting job opportunities, like new like career path kind of situations, like it's really interesting to see like professionally how like this is like turning into a thing where like I mean hell like you know like I would say even like even just past like 5 years ago there was like no real like we were all connected in our network like professionally with like with the industry like in other countries and other cities, but like as far as like the actual hiring process goes.
Oh, sure.
Like, this is, like, it's, like, really changed, you know?
Well, I think what you got is you got a situation where there's a burgeoning market that's very interested in doing the thing, and they have a lot of money, but they don't have a lot of experience, so they got to reach out.
They've got a lot of celery.
Yeah, they got a lot of celery. So they got to reach out to places and reach out to people who are, you know, kicking ass and taking names in other places and bring them over, you know? That makes sense to me. I think that trend will slow down, right? They'll populate the thing with people who are teachers and leaders and mentors like you,
sure,
Jesse. And then they'll those people will learn from you, and then those people will start taking those jobs, right? Because you got over there. Let's talk about that a little. You got over there. They were already number 8 when you got there on the 50 best list. So that means they were already kicking ass. So how do you feel about their team, the team that's under you? Are they rising up to that challenge, or are they just technicians that are just doing what you say? Are they coming to you with creativity? Are they coming to you with more to put on the table?
It's definitely getting there. I mean, you know, pretty green in general, like coming from a market like New York, where you just have like tons of killers and, you know, every good bar has a really long line of people who want to work there. It's a little different in Singapore. There's a quota in Singapore, so you have to hire 4 Singaporeans for any foreigner. So that's interesting. I mean, it's a good and a bad thing, you know? Like, I think it's a little bit of a struggle for food and beverage because obviously starting out in F&B is not, you know, the highest paying, or it's not, like, the most, like, glorious position when you come in, you're bar backing or washing dishes, whatever.
And that seems like a tough rule, too, because just because it should be based on percentage. What if my whole place only has 4 employees?
Yeah, I mean it's really tough, especially for like smaller like standalone places. Yeah, totally. And like so that's like hotels can have a little bit of advantage too because you know it's their overall staff. So you know they might like a bar might only have foreigners, but I think you know it's important to me that we're you know raising the culture and kind of like you're talking about you know 5 years from now I don't want them to be bringing out bartenders from other markets. I want Singaporeans to be leading that market and to be learning and taking over those programs. You know.
Or coming over here and kicking ass.
Yeah, 100%. Like 100%.
Bringing a whole different perspective
and
view.
Yeah, well, I actually brought one of our bartenders with me, Yana. I just saw her floating around outside there. It was her first time to New York, first time out here. And she's just like, Jesse, I want to move here. And I was like, she was like, would you support it? And I'm like, cool. But yeah, you know, like, let's get back. Why don't you put a plan together? And then I'll support you there and help you out. But right. Like, you know, right. I mean, it's amazing to, you know, see her and to see other people in the staff get to grow and get to see things and kind of like what you were touching on, Damon. I mean, with just like how this industry has grown, it's crazy, right? Yeah. You know, from 10 years ago. And it's really followed a lot of the trend, one of restaurants and then also just big business as it grows in general. Now there's just so much more opportunity. So, you know, Michter's brought us out here from Singapore and like there's so many brands now that are really like focusing their budgets towards, you know, connecting the world globally and in different ways, you know, having the opportunity to get a job, you know, somewhere like Singapore, which definitely wasn't really a thing 5-6 years ago so much, you know. It's just it's amazing. I mean, there's so many avenues now. It's not just bartender, bar owner. Obviously, you guys have done that, but like, you know, that was the only options a while ago.
Yeah, for sure. Now there's consultant, author, podcaster. Like, we've got it all. I do most of them.
Yeah.
I was going
to
be like...
But I would like to point out, just real quickly, I'm gonna break some balls real fast. So how many thousands of miles is it from Singapore to New York and then further on down to the southeast United States? And John still hasn't taken Damon and I down there. He's bringing you all the way from Singapore down to Michter's, and all right.
Well, you can go to Michter's, their Fort Nelson distillery, and if you take the tour, you'll hear a familiar voice.
Oh, that's right. You're the voiceover of their
Yeah.
That's so good. Damon's dulcet tones are telling you all about Michter's.
Yeah, baritone.
You'll get to hear it tomorrow.
Yeah. I can't wait.
That's outstanding.
Hey, Jesse, I want to talk to you about something real quick. So, like, you kind of like touched on this just a second ago, like the, you know, like you're talking about like the different like kind of like aspects of like different opportunities in the bar world with like being a bartender, bar owner, brand ambassador, author, like all this stuff. Like, what's your goal, man? Like, what's your plan, man?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, I've always...
I mean, obviously, it's going to change all the time,
of
right?
Of course, but... yeah, it will. I mean, you know, my approach to this business has always been, like, slow and methodical. Mm. I'm, like, the type of person that wants to, like...
Wait, I want to pause on slow and methodical and go back. You started bartending in 2007, is that what you said?
Well, like... you know, our business moves really fast, you know what I mean? It's true. Well, in the sense, like, I was offered to be a head bartender probably about 4 or 5 times before I accepted the role, you know, because I just feel like there was more I could learn. There was more I needed to do before I could be really good at it instead of kind of fumbling my way awesome. Through. So I still feel that way. You know, it's like now my job is I'm still very much working service, but my role is much more administrative than it ever has been, you know, so learning those back ends and what I could see myself, I think what I would like to see myself in a few years is more like a creative director kind of role is where I'm headed right now. Maybe I want to own a bar someday down the road, but you know, it's like the more you learn, the closer you get to understanding what it takes to own a bar, the more I'm kind of like, well, I'll just pump the brakes a little bit. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think
but it's
3 years from now,
it's like getting tattoos. It's like once you open the first one, you're like, oh shit, man. Like, I'm in it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we're in.
I gotta get that second one. Yeah. That third one, you know? But the thing is, like, the joy you get out of it is, like, it's, like, going back to, like, we were talking about, like, right at the beginning of the show, it's, like, the New York hustle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, like, you build that up in you, and you're, like, all right, fuck this. We're doing more of this. Mm-hmm. Not gonna let it bring me down. Not gonna let it get on top of me, you know. Like you gotta keep going, and like I really appreciate the fact that you brought up like all the admin work because like
that's the sexiest part of the job.
It's the sexiest part of the job.
100%. Yeah, putting us bartenders in those positions is definitely something. Dude, it's a big learning curve because we're used to walking in, walking bar, like, hey, how you doing? Let me get you a drink. You know, it's like. And then you have people who are like working in the business that have that more, you know, business mindset or come from like, you know, more hotel backgrounds and stuff like. You're gonna need those TPS reports.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's kind of like that. You got to shift a little bit.
Well, even just doing the math on, you know, when you scale up to a place. I mean, you came from again Dead Rabbit and Blacktail, which are massive programs.
Yeah, huge.
But like, I remember, you know, chatting with Chris Louder, when he was my he still bartended at Amore Margo when he was starting at Nomad, and he would talk about how, oh yeah, the prep guy makes 16 quarts of ginger syrup daily. That's just ginger syrup. We got a shitload of other syrups and things for him to do. Mm-hmm. Right, like, how do you even approach that scale of
crazy?
You
know I mean,
is it a more? I got zero.
Yeah. Well, that's why that program's always been so brilliant. You know. I mean, it's a lot, and it's a learning curve, and you know, I definitely, you know, I've just started traveling now too for the bar. I mean, like the first 6 months, it was just like lock in there, just almost about every day, and. To figure out all those things, you know, from, you know, like kind of redoing some of the costing, figuring out like where, you know, working with the right distributors for like, you know, different products. Because also as an open market, there will be like 4 distributors carrying the same product, you know, so you gotta like build your relationship with one, get your pricing.
You gotta build a relationship with all of them and make sure that you know, that they all know that you're looking at all the prices, right?
Yeah,
you're not just like, I'm just gonna buy from you. And then the other guy's like, all right, I got them now. I'm just gonna charge them what I want. They're not looking anymore.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, I mean,
keep them honest.
The volume there too is just staggering. I mean, we do, you know, $250,000 a week in sales there. I order 10 cases of gin just for our Atlas Martini a week. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like that, like, and that's just one cocktail. So yeah, the volume is massive there. So that's all been a learning curve, but I mean, it's like, you know, I'm up to the challenge. And I think, you know, coming into the bar that's number 8 in the world, it's like, and that talking about that methodical approach, I wouldn't have been ready to do Atlas if I didn't do Blacktail. Yeah. And when we opened Blacktail, you know, we were opening the sister bar to the best bar in the world at that point. Right. So, like, you know, I've felt this pressure before. Like, I know what it's like and, like, kind of how to navigate it. But it's just, like, one of those things where one thing leads to the next. And if you do take your time, then you can be ready for it. And you're not in this situation where you're just like, oh, my God, I just bit off way more than I can chew. You know, there's always going to be a learning curve. But
totally, man.
I'm a big fan of the, like, the process.
Yeah, totally. You know?
Yeah, being methodical and taking the correct steps.
Speaking of that, so I was thinking about this, like, right before the show. Especially with, like, all these people in for Bar Convent Brooklyn, there's a lot of, like, new blood, new bartenders that are, like, you know, a lot of people who listen, they came up to me yesterday, they were like, hey, we listen to the show, we love that.
It's like, I know, we're like rock stars at Bar Convent Brooklyn.
Yeah.
People are, like, coming up and taking photos of us and shit.
I'm just, like, hiding behind, like, you know, a citrus tree.
Everybody's just worried that maybe that's Dylan. Is that Dylan or Damon? Yeah, I don't know. Fuck it.
My twin brother.
Don't go talk to him.
But, like... I was thinking about this, like, yesterday. I was like, man, so I've been doing this for 16, 17 years now. Like, what advice would I give myself, like, 10 years ago?
Keep working on motorcycles.
Well, no, that's the thing about motorcycles. You always have to keep working on them. But, like, what advice would, like, if you could go back to your, like, 10-year younger self, what would you... Like, I think this is important for, like, a lot of, especially, like, a lot of the new, like, generations for bartenders and, like, people who want to, like, get into, like, bar ownership and brand ambassador work. What advice do you think you would give yourself 10 years ago?
I mean, you know, honestly.
Sorry, it's a fucking heady question.
I know, it is. And, but, you know, I mean, I'm just going to say the first thing that comes to my mind, and that would just be, like, not to rush it, you know, to take your time, to learn from people. To be receptive to constructive criticism. I think that was probably one of my biggest learning curves is just, you know, I was always like problem with authority type of person growing up. So it was always kind of, always kind of hard for me for like people to like really like correct me or come down hard on me. I always had something to say back, you know? So I would say from a maturity standpoint, just to like take your time to learn from people, realize when someone knows more than you, when someone has more experience than you.
Sure.
And you know, if you're going to commit, go all the way in. Committing isn't just going to the parties and hanging out. Committing is taking your work home, you know, reading the cocktail books. When you're working around someone, when you go sit in front of Southern Teague at Amore Amargo, like, it's a quiet night. Not that you guys have many of those, but if it is, you know, ask him about some Amaro. You know, have the conversation.
Pick his brain,
continue to grow and to learn. And I think one kind of negative aspect that comes with the massive growth of the business is – I mean, people are just getting big opportunities, you know, when they're probably not totally ready for them, you know, especially like being in Singapore, it's like,
I mean,
things are opening all the time, you know?
Yeah. I would piggyback on that notion and say, you know, take your time, but I've always said, always take the meeting, but you don't always have to take the job.
Always have the conversation.
100%. Always take the meeting because that meeting is learning too, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like all those meetings you had up, like you said, it eventually focused itself that you guys were all heading in the same direction and then you took the job.
Yeah.
But if you hadn't just taken that first text, that first call, that first Skype, like just take the meeting.
Yeah. I guess I guess it would take like a lot of explaining to really go into depth on that thought of that advice, what I would give. But yeah, I mean, it's like take your time with it, but also... It's kind of hard. You got to know when to take the jump, too. You know, you got to know when it's the right time to do something.
There's one of the things I love about this industry so much. You can never know it all. Like, there's always more to learn. So, like you said, like, listening, reading, like, it's all very important. I always say, like, I know Sethers heard me say this a billion times, but, like, I always say the two finest things you can do for another human being. Cook for them and listen to them, and neither are easy to do. But it's true. Like, obviously that's why we have our radio show.
Indeed, Jesse. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, could they? And if so, how so?
Yes, they can get in touch with me. Social media would probably be the best way here. Right? Yeah, I'd say my Instagram at Jesse J Vida, JesseJVida,
Jesse J Vida on Instagram. And I'm sure Atlas has an Instagram they could follow too, just to see
gorgeous
photos of that space and the drinks that you're producing over there.
That's Atlas Bar SG.
Atlas Bar SG. That's great. Well, man, what a great time having you in here. Thanks for bringing us some gin and tonics. Thanks for bringing Quiet John over there. Say hi again, John. Say hi.
Hey, guys.
There you go. John's going to eventually take me. I guess both of you are getting to go. I've never been down there to see Michter's and drink some whiskey. You know, I did open an all-American whiskey bar, and we are featuring some of your Jews. It's fine.
So whatever, yeah.
No big deal.
No big deal. But, man, what a pleasure to have you on, man. And I can't believe that you haven't been on in my time, and you hadn't been on the show even before that, right? It's pretty shocking,
yeah.
Given all the cool things you did before you left New York.
It's been almost 10 years on the Speakeasy.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, almost 10 years for Heritage Radio and almost 10 years for the Speakeasy.
What a great segue, Damon.
Yeah, thank
you. It is the 10th anniversary summer drive here at Heritage Radio Network, and we've got a bunch of new member gifts. You can go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and donate different amounts for different cool prizes. We've got a really cool limited edition enamel pin that says HRN and looks like a slice of pizza. We got our new limited edition pizza pocket tee, and of course, we always tie pizza into the thing because we're here at Roberta's Pizza. We've got a limited edition deluxe bonbon box from Fine and Raw Chocolate. You can also get a Chef's Choice spice selection from Burlap and Barrel for different donation levels. So go check it out and donate some money towards the station so that we can keep producing content like this so you can keep listening and drinking with us every week.
Absolutely. Souther, Jesse, dude. John.
Big John.
Even though you didn't say any fucking thing.
You know, your silence says a lot, John.
Yeah.
You got a presence. You got a presence in the room, and it speaks volumes, and we're glad to have you here every time.
It's really been great to be back in the
great
studio.
Great to be back with you, man. I haven't seen you in like 2 months.
I know, man.
I opened a bar while you were gone, and I'm opening another one next week. You know, when you're not around, I get freaked out. I start opening bars.
All right, well, I'll not be around more.
Yeah.
I'd prefer you stick around.
All right. Well, thank you. So that's cool. This has been a great show, guys. I really appreciate catching up with all of you. Especially you, Souther, and hey, congratulations on the new spot.
Thank you.
And for everyone out there who's hanging out at Bar Club in Brooklyn, swing around, like come see us at our bars. Like we're all going to be hanging out for the entire week. Happy Negroni week coming up. And Jesse, we'll see you in Singapore, man.
I hope so, man. And also, guys, quite an honor to be on the show. Been a fan of both of your careers coming up, and it's quite an honor for you guys to have me on. So thank you very much for that, and we do hope to see both of you in Singapore. It's an amazing city.
Yeah, man. Our pleasure.
We're going. All right, we're going to be on the Celery.
Cheers, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks so much. All right.
Cheers, everybody. Thanks so much.
The Speakeasy on
the devil with your rock and roll, Lord, knows that country music. Save your soul, the devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound.
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.